Hello and welcome to the Witness History Podcast from the BBC World Service. Today we're going back to February 1966 when Kwame Nkrumah, one of Africa's most famous leaders, was ousted from power in Ghana. Chris Hesse worked closely with Nkrumah as his official cinematographer and was with him at the time. He spoke to Alex Last in 2021.
On Thursday, the 24th of February 1966, the Ghana Armed Forces, in cooperation with the Ghana Police Service, took over the reins of government of this country.
In 1966, the first leader of Ghana and one of the most prominent men in Africa, Kwame Nkrumah, was deposed while he was out of the country.
In what may be truly described as one of the most historic and boldest ventures in the history of this country.
I find it very difficult to brush Nkrumah off my mind because I saw exactly what happened. Nkrumah knew that there were some powers working against him, so this could happen anytime, but when, no one knew.
Chris Hesse is a legendary Ghanaian filmmaker. He was with Kwame Nkrumah when the coup happened, because in the 1950s and 60s he worked as the official cinematographer for the Ghanaian leader.
I cannot forget those days.
Kwame, the star of Ghana, freedom. Nkrumah, star of Ghana.
Just under a decade earlier, in 1957, Kwame Nkrumah had led Ghana to independence, becoming the first African nation to free itself from European colonial rule.
We must change our attitudes, our minds. We must realize that from now on, we are no more a colonial, but a free and independent people.
I worked with him for 10 years. I eventually lived with him, yeah. We did a lot of things together. I was then 24, 25, small boy.
What was he like?
Nkrumah was an ordinary human being, very Christian. He spoke his mind. He spoke the truth. He was extremely honest. Very nice man. Very, very nice president. He could sit in his office and talk about life. You know? And he loved art. He loved to watch films. He spoke a lot.
Nkrumah even introduced Chris to yoga, which the Ghanaian leader practiced as part of his daily routine.
He taught me yoga, and I loved it. I loved it because almost each afternoon, he would lock his door and stand on his head for some few minutes, and I would do the same. You know, I started copying him.
In public, too, Nkrumah certainly was the charismatic leader. He championed Pan-Africanism and socialism and supported African liberation movements. He launched major development projects like the Great Volta Dam. But he had plenty of critics in Ghana too. And over the years, he became increasingly authoritarian. Hundreds of political opponents were locked up, often for years, without charge. He made the country a one-party state. He took on more powers and became president for life. And crucially, he also moved Ghana closer to the communist bloc. The economy too started to struggle. There were several assassination attempts in the early 1960s.
Nkrumah needs more than anything to keep the loyalty of the Ghanaian army.
We cannot, under any circumstances, allow imperialists and new colonialists to interlock with traitors in our midst to deflect us from the path of duty and progress.
And he was right to be worried. Senior figures in the Ghanaian army, the police and the civil service had started to plot to remove him, and it appears some had contacts with Western intelligence, particularly the CIA, who were no fans of Nkrumah and wanted him gone too. In February 1966, Nkrumah planned to go with a large government delegation via Moscow and China to North Vietnam as part of a peace mission to end the Vietnam War. The coup plotters saw an opportunity.
Any time we flew out, I think it was at the back of his mind. Anything could happen. He had postponed that trip on 3 occasions, but he had to go. And then we went to Moscow, then to China. And that was when the coup came.
In Ghana, in just a matter of hours, the Ghanaian military and the police had seized control of the country. The coup leader, General Ankrah, later went on Ghanaian radio to explain.
One man has collected all power into his own hands, with the pretentious claim that he enjoyed the unqualified and absolute support of the 7 million people of this country. This man was Kwame Nkrumah, Africa's number one tyrant and dictator.
It was late day, getting to the night, that the message came. It was at the same time when we were getting ready to fly out to Hanoi, when the Chinese government officially informed him about the coup in Ghana.
What was Nkrumah's reaction to the news?
The question, when we talk about reaction, he didn't cry. You know, he didn't shout. Nkrumah was a matured politician. He knew a lot of things. He knew this coup could happen.
What was your reaction?
I was worried about my wife. That was what was on my mind. But I didn't show it. You know, there were no facilities for telephones. I was just dreaming in my own mind what was happening at home.
All traces of Nkrumah and his party, the Convention People's Party, are being removed. And there's no question about the feeling of release among all Ghanaians to whom I've spoken. And there is, of course, great jubilation at the return of political prisoners, 450 of whom were set free yesterday.
Back in China, the next question for Nkrumah and the delegation was where to go. They first got on a plane to Moscow. For Chris Hesse, it would be a memorable flight.
We're flying back to Moscow. You know, he was in the first class area, you know, with his ministers. And I was sitting at the back of the first class. Then he looked back and saw me sitting there. So he came and sat by me. He said, you know, there's something going on in Africa. And this coup is the beginning of a lot of series of coups which will happen in Africa. Then the whole continent will then sink to the ground and a new Africa will grow out of the ashes. But then he said, I shouldn't allow fear to stop using my camera. Whatever is happening, I should keep on filming. And then he ended by saying that through my films, in future, the world will use those films to judge him.
When they arrived in a snowy Moscow, Nkrumah was whisked off to the Kremlin to consider his next move. Chris Hesse and the rest of the delegation stayed at the airport. They eventually received instructions to return to Ghana. When he finally got back, Chris Hesse was summoned to meet the new military rulers and was asked to continue as the official filmmaker. He would go on to work for every Ghanaian head of state for the next 3 decades. As for Nkrumah, he left Moscow and went into exile in Guinea in West Africa, home to his good friend and fellow Pan-Africanist leader, Sekou Touré. On arrival, he received a rapturous welcome and vowed to return.
I just want to give you the assurance that I am on my way to Accra. I am on my way to Ghana.
But there was no return to Ghana. He died in exile in 1972. But, says Chris Hesse, in the years and decades that followed, as Ghanaians endured some tough times and corrupt politicians, in Ghana there has been a renaissance for the reputation of Kwame Nkrumah.
People started talking hard about him, especially when new people came and were looting money here and there, buying mansions abroad and bribery and corruption, etc., etc. So see, you find most of the people who hated him crying when the body was brought here for burial. They were weeping for him. They wished that he could come back, but too late.
That was Chris Hesse speaking to Alex Last in 2021. Thank you for listening to the Witness History podcast from the BBC World Service. And if you'd like to listen to more stories about African history, head to the Witness History website.
From the brilliant and bizarre.
It was really surreal. It was a surreal kind of atmosphere there. You couldn't really see anybody.
To the shocking and unexpected.
I'm just wondering, what are we going to do now? This was really my worst fear. He found 100% horse meat that was labelled as beef.
Witness the stories that have shaped our world, told by the people who were there.
When he went to the factory, the poodle went in front of him, so the workers only knew, oh, the boss is here.
Many people had many things to lose by our victory. The future was not so bright.
Witness history.
We had a designer. He brought in a fully storyboarded idea about how the Queen would arrive by jumping out of a helicopter. And we all said, That's brilliant, but it's never going to happen.
Witness history at bbcworldservice.com/witnesshistory or wherever you get your podcasts.